You're listening to the We Lead Well podcast, where well-being matters. This episode is brought to you in partnership with Transform Education Coaching, headteacherchats.com, and the Teach Well Alliance. Enjoy the show. Hello, and welcome to the latest episode of the We Lead Well podcast. I didn't actually mention in our last episode that we reached a really important milestone because it was our 20th episode, and I'm so excited about that because when I started to make the podcast, I wasn't even sure if anyone would be interested and if anyone would listen. So to say that we reached our 20th episode and that we achieved 3,000 downloads is such an exciting thing to report for me. I cannot tell you how over the moon I am that people actually listen to the show. So thank you so much for listening. We've got listeners all around the world, which I also find absolutely amazing. So wherever you are listening, thank you so much for taking the time to download the show. I really hope that you've taken some learning from listening to the shows and that you've been able to apply that learning to improve your own well-being or improve the well-being of your staff or improve as a leader. Whatever that might be in your school, I hope that it's made a difference because that's why I started to make the podcast. Today, I am so honoured to welcome to the show Clemmy Stewart. Clemmy is so much fun and you're going to really enjoy this interview. She's a senior head of two prep schools in Southwest London, as well as also being the vice chair of governors at a primary school. And I was so glad she took the time to join us, as her upbeat attitude to life and work and her good humour are so infectious. And I first encountered her on Twitter. And the reason I asked her to come on the show is because I just think her positivity is so uplifting, and you will definitely find that in the interview. The way that she stayed so positive through such adversity and challenging times in schools and education is just an example to us all. I know I'm waxing lyrical about her, but she is an amazing woman and she does it all. She manages to do it all, and I am in complete awe of her. It was such an enjoyable interview in which we talk about, amongst other things, women in leadership, well-being and CPD, and how we can make the best of going back to school and trying to get back to normal after lockdown. Clemmy Stewart, welcome to the We Lead Well podcast. I'm so happy that you said you would come on the show. How are you?
I'm really well, thank you. I'm really well, and thank you so much for asking me to join you.
Oh, you're welcome. I was saying to you just before, wasn't I, that I love your Twitter posts. I think you're really positive and you have a really optimistic outlook. And whenever I read something that you've put on Twitter, it just makes me feel a little bit uplifted and a little bit more positive. So I thought if we could get you on the show and you could share some of your positivity with us, that would be awesome. Can you start by just telling us a little bit about yourself and what you do and how you got there?
Yeah, so I am currently senior head of two prep schools in Southwest London, in the independent sector. I'm also a governor of two of our primary academies. And then I also hold a school improvement portfolio for four academy schools on the South Coast.
Wow.
So I'm pretty big, but I love my job and wouldn't do it any other way. Prior to where I work now, I was in a junior state school that was actually in special measures at the time. So I did 4 years of special measures to good, which was amazing. I love that as well. And then before that, I worked in a boarding school. So I've kind of had a foot in all sorts of different camps. And when I'm not doing that, I actually host my own podcast with Emma Kell. I'm also training for the London Marathon, and I'm doing my master's with the National College of Education. So lots of busy things going on, but I love all of them.
That is amazing. How do you find time to do all that?
Do you know, I think the simplest answer to that as a woman in her 30s is I don't have a family yet, so I can engage a lot of my time in all of that. And I have an incredibly supportive husband who helps me to do all those sorts of things as well. And I think it's just because I get real energy and enjoyment from all of the things I do that it just spurs me on to do more and more. I struggle in the holidays. I don't like sitting still for too long. So yeah, it's all enjoyable.
You can't sit still for long then.
No, I'm awful at sitting still. Awful.
So how long have you been teaching for, and when did you become a head teacher? Because that's quite young to be a head, isn't it?
Yeah, so I actually became head when I was 29.
Wow. And,
funnily enough, didn't have a huge ambition ever to be a head. I've yet to meet somebody who goes into teaching thinking they want to become a head teacher. I think you go into teaching because you just love children and you love helping children to secure the best outcomes and relish every moment they spend in the classroom. And I absolutely loved doing that. And I started teacher training, gosh, about 12, 13 years ago now, and have never, ever looked back. And then I moved through to leadership quite quickly, actually. So the school that I was at that was in special measures, I became head of behaviour and inclusion quite quickly and head of year, and just really enjoyed having a bigger impact over more children than just the ones in my class. And then I moved to become the head of teaching and learning at the school I'm in now. And again, just absolutely love that opportunity to shape the curriculum and pedagogy and teaching approaches and just enabling change across the whole school. And then I found out the head was leaving, and I was quite upset by that because I really liked her. And then I started meeting some of the people looking around, and I thought, I'm not sure I want to work for you. And I thought, but then if that's the case, I either need to put my hat in the ring or move on. So I thought for a really good CPD experience, I would just go through the process and see what it's like. And before I knew it, I got the job. which was as much a shock to me as I think it was everybody else. And actually the first few months of that role was really just persuading almost that I was ready and I was mature enough, and it didn't matter that my age began with a 2 and not a 3 or a 4. And I'd like to think now over the last few years I've really proven that, but there was definitely an element of imposter syndrome to start with, for sure.
Oh, was there?
Oh, definitely. I actually had one parent who booked an appointment with me just to tell me that she thought I was too young for the job.
Wow.
An incredible experience. And I thanked her for her feedback, and I thanked her for her honesty. It's no good saying you've got an open door policy unless you really do. But I said to her, give me 6 months and I'll prove to you that I'm definitely the right person to lead your daughter's school forward. And she did agree when she left that actually I'd done all right. There was definitely an element of surprise. You know, you don't expect a head in their 20s for sure. I saw a male head the other day tweeting that he was a head at 25, which is just extraordinary. But I do think it's about ability rather than just age.
I think you probably tend to find fewer younger women as heads than men. I did see there was a man, he's quite impressive actually, and I thought I must try and get him on the show. He's the head of a special school, and I think he'd been the head of it at a similar age, in his mid-20s. But as a woman being young, that is very unusual, isn't it?
Yeah, I think it is. And I think that probably, sadly, says a bit more about us women than it does necessarily panels, although I'm sure there's some sort of research to be done there for sure. But I just think, you know, often, and this is a really generalising statement, so I apologise in advance, but I think women are very bad sometimes at thinking they're ready for things. You know, the whole 10% braver thing that comes out of Women's Ed, I think is brilliant, absolutely brilliant. If anything, up it to 15 or 20%, because we do need to be braver. And we need to have more belief in what we can achieve. But I also think we need to accept that we're never going to be a fully finished package. There was a brilliant thread on Twitter just the other day saying, how do you know when you're ready for your first headship? I don't think you do. I think it's just, it's the balance. And I think when you think there are more aspects of the job description that you can do than what you can't do yet, then you're ready to start dipping your toe in the water. And I think as women, we've got to encourage each other more, lift each other up more, and use mentoring and coaching and support to make sure we're all as strong as each other rather than ripping each other down.
It's interesting, isn't it? Because I think some studies have been done, haven't they, into women and men and their responses to job descriptions and person specifications. And I think women have a tendency to, if they don't meet virtually all of the criteria in job descriptions or person specifications, they won't apply for it. Whereas men do have that, they are more courageous when it comes to things like that and think, well, I'll have a go anyway and throw my hat in the ring. And as women, we tend to want to, probably we want to go and be able to do the job perfectly, but that's not even possible, is it? Like you just saying.
No, it's not. And in fact, perfect is a word I've banned at my school. So no one's allowed to use it because it's just the impossible. We've just banned it. You're not going to be perfect ever. So you might as well get rid of that now and aim to be a little bit better than you were yesterday, or a little bit stronger, or a little bit faster, or whatever it is you're working towards. And it's the same with the teachers. You know, I have teachers that come to me and say, oh, I'm thinking about applying for this leadership role. I'm like, well, why haven't you? What is it that's holding you back?
Yeah, if you're thinking about it, do it.
Do it. Well, I'm not very good with technology. Okay, learn it. You know, there are so many aspects to roles that you just need to learn as you go along. And I think if you feel that you've got the confidence and the vision and the drive, then you absolutely must put yourself into those situations where you at least try it. And ultimately, it's not up to you. It's up to the panel. If they think you're ready, you're ready. So put the trust in them and apply for the job, go through the process. I always say to people as well, just go through the process step by step, because through writing the application form, you'll know if your heart starts to beat a bit faster and you're excited by that opportunity, then maybe it is right for you. If you're writing it with a feeling of dread and God, I hope I never have to do that, it probably isn't the right thing for you. So just seeing each step of the process as a stage by stage process is quite helpful, I think.
I think fear is something that stops us from applying, isn't it? It's a fear of being rejected. I think you have to step beyond that, don't you, out of your comfort zone.
Yeah, I think you do, and I think you have to be comfortable with experiencing fear. I actually did a TED talk last year with my boss, and the two of us, I can't tell you, you know, we are two accomplished female leaders, we run schools, you know, we stand up and present in a multitude of different situations. But if you could have seen us 5 minutes before we went on stage, honestly, it was mortifying. We were so nervous. We were so scared. And, you know, we really talked ourselves up to it. Once we were out there, it was absolutely fine. And we learned so much from the experience. But there is a genuine fear, I think, of other people's perception of you, or what happens if you fail? What's the worst that will happen? And I think as educators, we're so good at saying to children, just go for it, overcome your fears, growth mindset, until it comes to ourselves. And we're like, no, I can never do that. And I think it's about just making sure that we practice what we preach to our children is so important.
Yeah, definitely. One of the questions I was going to ask you was, why do you think there aren't as many female heads or SLT as there are female teachers? I mean, it's closer in primary schools, isn't it? But there's quite a disparity in secondary schools. And do you think there are any other reasons for it?
I think we've got to be our own cheerleaders, and we've got to start putting ourselves forward for things more. I think also it's either a self-fulfilling prophecy in a positive or a negative way. You know, I was appointed to my first headship by a female head who totally saw the value in what I could bring to the table. But equally, I suppose if I was surrounded by only male leaders, I don't know if I would be able to see myself in that role. So I think the more female leaders we have, then the more people we aspire to follow. I think we have a role in terms of all forms of inclusion and diversity in championing people who come from different parts and different experiences, so that everyone's got that opportunity to shine. And it's about equity, I think, sometimes rather than equality, and making sure that people have those opportunities. And then it's making sure that people are carefully scaffolding people's career paths. And I think, you know, again, at the risk of generalizing, men are seen to be ambitious and will always be looking for that next opportunity. And we need to encourage more women to do that if that's the path that they want to follow. I think it's also very important that we're clear that it's okay to not want to climb the career ladder all the time. And then I think obviously there's the element of family and raising children. And I know many a female peer has said to me, oh, I would have gone for that, but I've just had a baby, or I don't think my application will be welcome because I'm on maternity leave, and those sorts of things. And that drives me absolutely potty on behalf of my family.
I'm going to say now that things like that just make me livid. And it really disappoints me that I hear and I've heard and I've been in meetings where men have said things, and even women sometimes have said things that I have been so angered by, about potential people who could take on a job and do it successfully. And things like that have been brought up. And in 2021, that should not be happening, should it?
I completely agree. And I think, you know, again, there are certain groups of people who still think it's okay to say things like that. Or, you know, I've had people assume before that I'm the head's PA when I've turned up to conferences or meetings. They're like, oh, and who are you working for? I'm like, my school, I guess.
When I was talking to Benny Cara the other week, she turned up for the deputy head interview. And the person at the reception thought she was coming to do supply work, you know.
It's incredible. And people just make that assumption, I think. And, you know, we've got to challenge those assumptions. And I think we have got to be braver at saying in a meeting, that's completely inappropriate. Or what I love to do is make people wriggle a bit by saying, sorry, can you just expand on that point? What do you mean? I don't understand your point. And say, well, you know, she's got two young children. Sorry, I'm being really thick. I don't understand what you mean. And I make them say something completely inappropriate. Yeah. And then challenge it.
I think I've challenged someone once who said, oh well, she's, you know, in her mid to late 20s, she's going to be, she'll be going off on maternity leave. And I was like, and why is that important? Yeah. If that person is the best person for the job, then you deal with that when it comes up. And that's about having systems and processes in place to support women who are on maternity leave and coming back to work and all those things. But it's absolutely not acceptable to say that, is it?
No, you've got to challenge it. And again, you've got to be helpful. So, I mean, I know we appointed somebody into a leadership role and she came in for an interview when she, her maternity leave really was quite early on. And she was mortified to say to me, I can't make that time because I'll probably be feeding. I was like, great, let's change the whole thing around. You've got to have the opportunity to be able to come in, do this interview. And if your baby's hungry, we'll change the time. She's proven to be a fantastic head of department. And we've just got to challenge the assumptions and be brave enough. You know, I think we can all be guilty of sitting in meetings previously and condoning comments purely by not challenging them.
Exactly.
Sometimes it's just the case of challenging it.
If you don't challenge it, you reinforce it, don't you?
Absolutely. And it's saying, actually, it's okay for you to talk like that in these meetings. That's fine. And it's absolutely not.
I go back to when I had my first son in 2002, and I was in I was very unhappy in a role that I was doing and wanted to go back to a school where I'd taught previously. And they'd said there was a position. So I went to speak to the head and he wanted me to go back at the start of September when James would only have been 9 weeks old. And I really didn't want to do that and said to him, my maternity leave should be until at least October half term. And basically he said to me, well, take it or leave it.
What?
Yeah. And I would have hoped that 20 years down the line, we would have been in a different place in terms of the way that we view maternity and pregnancy and all those things. But I don't know if we really are in a lot of respects.
Yeah, and I think a lot of it comes down to the culture and climate of a school or a multi-academy trust or a local authority and how that is supported. And I think you can see that right from the moment you look at an application or an advert, you know, how are we wording that? I mean, we've just advertised for a couple of roles recently and I reread them to think, how would this come across to somebody? And almost like sort of profile different people and thought, how would I feel if I was that person reading this advert? What would I think if I was looking at this website? Because again, you can say all you want, but actually it's how it feels once you're in that environment. And I think there are some amazing places making some great strides with it, but I think until we all start championing each other and challenging things when we hear them, you know, we've got to do that more.
I love these conversations because I have about five different thoughts that I'm like, right, okay, what should I say first? Because I love the idea of us being our own cheerleaders. I think that's brilliant, and cheering each other on and not seeing each other as competition. I also think there's an element of women who are ambitious sometimes are seen as like, I suppose the phrase might be ball busters. You know, there's that woman must be, if she's so ambitious, she must be really aggressive, and you know, and that's so wrong as well, isn't it?
Hate that. I absolutely hate that. And I think it's so important that people can see how you've got to the position that you're in. And I mean, I have got to the position I'm in through people supporting me and encouraging me and mentoring me and guiding me. And I hope to do the same for people, you know, coming up along with me. And I think that one thing I've really noticed in the last year during this pandemic is how our sector has suddenly got very good at lifting each other up and supporting each other. And, you know, there are these gorgeous threads every week of, oh, you must follow this person, or kindness ripples and all these lovely things. And I feel certainly from, you know, I currently work in the independent sector, and that's often a bit of a, you know, it's not a particularly popular area. And yet in the last year, people have been sharing cross-sector projects and cross-sector resources. And I think we've got to make sure that's one of the things that carries on when this is all over, that we continue to lift each other up and support each other and highlight each other's strengths, rather than starting to do that pulling down piece, which I just can't bear. I hate it.
I've just created a group coaching program for women leaders with that in mind, so that you can be part of a supportive group or a supportive network. And yes, that might last while the group coaching program goes on, but hopefully people will make links and networks that they will be able to use for support in the future as well.
Definitely. And I think we've got a responsibility to do that. You know, it's like the old, you know, it takes a village to raise a child, but I think it takes community to raise a leader, actually.
Yeah.
And if you've had that experience, and I've been so lucky in my time that I absolutely want to share that with other people. I was asked the other day if I'd be interested in mentoring somebody coming up through, and I absolutely would be delighted to do that, because it's, I see it as my responsibility to share that and hopefully share my many mistakes and failures, as well as where things have gone well, so that somebody can borrow some of that learning. And if that continues, then we'll have more and more people supporting each other to do well for our children, because that's what it's about ultimately.
At the end of the day, it is, isn't it? It's about doing the best for the children. The other thing that came to mind when we were just having the conversation about pregnancy and maternity leave and women with young children, is that you probably wouldn't consider that to be an aspect of a well-being policy, but actually it's quite a big part of what well-being is in schools, isn't it? I've done an interview with Nikki Bright about the menopause and how important it is that there's more awareness of that. Mm-hmm. But I think a lot of leaders don't tend to think of these things as being important to well-being.
Yeah, I have. I'm like, God, my team laugh at me the whole time, because I have the utmost respect for teachers who have children. I honestly do not know how they do it, whether they are ahead, whether they're a part-time teacher, whatever role they're doing in schools. The fact they can juggle teaching and everything that goes with it and a family, I think, is absolutely extraordinary. And I say that to my teams all the time. They're like, oh, okay, if I head off early tonight, because, you know, I've got parents, and I'm like, go, leave everything. You've got to make sure you're there. Because I just think it's extraordinary. I don't know how they manage it. I really don't. And I have so much respect for colleagues that have children and work in education. I think they're phenomenal, phenomenal. And if they can do that, gosh, they can do anything.
And that's another part of your wellbeing policy also, isn't it? That you support people with children to be able to go and do those things that are so important when your children are small, or even when they're growing up as well, to be able to go and see sports day, or to be able to go and watch them if they're in a play, and that you provide an opportunity for parents to do that, because when they can do that, they feel better about themselves, don't they?
Definitely. And that's why, you know, we do a star survey every year for our multi-academy trust. And one of the questions is, you know, would you recommend this school to somebody with children? And would you send your own children here? And I think that's really important. If you can create a school culture that's good enough that you'd send your own children there, then you can be there for all that stuff anyway, which I think is really special. And you get that family feel. And I think, you know, schools have to bend and flex to the needs of all of their, you know, staff. You know, whether it's they want to start taking some time to look after an elderly relative, or, you know, whatever it might be. I think this year has taught us that need for flexibility, because life is bigger than school. You know, people have families and people have different things happening. School is, God, it's me, an unpopular thing to say, it's just a job. It's so much more than that in real terms to all of us. But actually, it's something that you do to earn money. And you have a life around that job. Now, most of us, and I put myself in this camp very much so, I'm completely in love with my job. I love my job. I love going to work. And I get a huge amount of enjoyment and fulfillment from that. But I also do have a life outside of school. And I think it's really important that we role model as leaders. Do your job, do it to the best of your ability, and throw yourself into it with love and commitment and loyalty. But also, go home early one night a week and go for a run. And at the weekends, go off for the week to London, you know, the weekend to London if you can. All those sorts of different opportunities that make you who you are as a person and make you the best that you can be when you rock up on Monday.
What do you do when someone, if you identified in your school a teacher who you noticed had lost that love and that passion? Because there are those people in schools, aren't there? You know, people who've become So because it's hard, because it's really, really hard, and it's demanding and it's draining. And when you've got children, or when you've got other things going on, and I'm not saying it's exclusively when you've got children, is it? Some people are going through other things. I know there are a lot of teachers who've got elderly parents who they have to go and look after. And, you know, there are all sorts of other things going on. So when you identify someone in your school community like that, what do you do as a head? Before we find out how Clemmy approaches this challenging situation, I'd just like to talk to you a little bit about our partner, Head Teacher Chat. Head Teacher Chat discusses lots of topics, from how to support pupils with learning, how to support parents, and the many issues that come with leading a school. The aim of Head Teacher Chat is to support head teachers and school leaders who are in a challenging and often lonely role. They do this by offering lots of information for schools to tap into. For example, they have lots of fantastic education companies on their database for leaders to discover, as well as leadership templates to download. They've written product reviews for leaders who are looking for products for their school. And this year, they've even launched the very first school leader planner, especially designed to help leaders to be productive and organised. If you'd like to hear more about Head Teacher Chat, you can find them on their website at www.headteacherchat.com. Head Teacher Chat. It's what head teachers are talking about. Now let's find out how Clemmy supports staff in her school to find their passion again.
So we are very, very lucky that for the last 2-3 years, we have had a coaching program in place at my school. So anybody in either one of my schools who wants coaching can be coached, which means I think at the moment something like 57 staff are part of a coaching program.
Wow.
We have regular coaching conversations, you know, every couple of weeks. If it's a sunny day like today, we go and have a walk down by the river because, you know, we're right by the River Thames. Otherwise, it's in an office over a cup of tea. And those conversations are where we find that stuff out. And through open questioning, really try and get under the skin of how are things going? How are you feeling? And luckily, people are honest enough to say, I'm actually having a really bad week. And then you can start to unpeel it like an onion, I suppose. And I think it's the job of any school leader to A, be able to have those honesty conversations, B, support staff to develop their own strategies to fix the things that can be fixed, C, as a leader to fix the things that they can't fix that you can. And then when you've cleared away all of the stuff that could be the issue and they're still just not very happy, then sometimes it's giving them permission to say, is this what you want to do? Or actually, do you want to explore something else? And letting them know that that's okay as well. And they're a bit like a boomerang. If they need to go away for a couple of years and then come back, that's something you need to explore with them. If it's that they need to trial something completely different and go with your best wishes, great. But you need to know before you get to that point that you've done everything in your power to make sure it's something that's in your control that you could have fixed. Often it's something, a change, they just need a change in year group, a change in subject, an additional responsibility, a project they want to lead on. We do, as I said, a staff survey every year. And in fact, since the pandemic, we've done one every probably month or two. And again, just reading those verbatim comments, you can see really quickly what's starting to impact on people's lives and how you can change that. But equally, sometimes people just need to do something different, and it's about making that okay as well.
That is so important, isn't it? It's like saying to someone, you don't have to be a teacher for the rest of your life if you don't want to be.
I mean, how many teachers have you come across in your life where you've wanted to, and not as a head, funny enough, I wouldn't ever do it as a head because I think it could be really badly misconstrued, but in other roles where you thought, why are you here? I mean, I remember one of my teaching practices, you know, that kind of, that sounds awful now, that generalised sort of, you know, slightly grumpier teacher who always sits on the same chair with the same mug and sits and goes, oh, it's all cyclical. In 10 years time, you'll see this assessment coming back round. And the way that they talk about the children always gives it away because there's no love there. It's the case. Oh, and then they did this and then they did that. And you just think, why are you here?
why would you put yourself through that? They're so jaded, aren't they? And it becomes, it's either torturous or it becomes like, I don't know, like, yes, I did it. I got through it and it's awful, but I'm doing it.
Yeah. Why are you doing it? You don't have to do it. You know, you've not been called up. It's not national service. You don't want to do it. Don't do it.
Because if you don't enjoy teaching, the children know, don't they?
They totally know. I mean, I think, again, think back to when you were a child, I could tell you exactly which teachers did not enjoy teaching me, whether that was me or something else, I don't know. But And they were grumpy, and I don't remember any of their lessons being any good. And yeah, everyone has off days, don't get me wrong, but you know, ultimately we love what we do. And God, if the last year's taught us anything, look at how many teachers have stayed and gone through the mill open. I mean, I was starting a new notebook today and wrote reopening and underlined it and thought, how many times have I written that as a heading in the last year? But God, we've all just carried on because we love what we do. We love our children. We have that real sense of servitude. But if that's gone, I don't know why you would get up and do it. Because it's hard. It's hard work.
Yeah. I think some teachers don't know what else they can do either, do they?
True. And yet, you look at the skills we employ every day. I don't know what you couldn't do, apart from maybe flying a plane or driving a tank.
Heart surgery. Yeah. You probably could do that. Yeah.
Maybe launching Perseverance to NASA, to Mars. But yeah, you know, you think those transferable skills in teaching around empathy and listening and organization planning, my goodness, we're amazing at that. Being strategic, but also being operational, the subject knowledge, working with others. We're actually really quite cool, us teachers. So there's so much more we could do if we want to. And teaching is one of those jobs you can leave and come back to. You know, we're always going to need teachers. We're always going to need good teachers. So maybe people need to be a bit kinder to themselves and say, you know, I'm really not enjoying it for whatever reason. I'm going to take 6 months out and I'm going to do something completely different. And then if I want to go back to teaching, I can. And if I don't, then I've got loads of other transferable skills I can use. And I do think that is going to happen loads next year. Yeah. I reckon a lot of people will have taken stock this year and thought, I've got an itch that I really need to scratch and I'm going to do it and see what happens.
Yeah. One of the things that you mentioned is the coaching. And I think that lots of teachers who have become jaded can actually have they can find their mojo again through coaching, because often people just get caught up in the busyness of teaching, don't they? So that they're on the hamster wheel and they never get time to go back to think about what was it that made them want to be a teacher in the first place, and what do they love about it. They've forgotten those things, and sometimes coaching can just bring you back round to giving you a bit of space in which you can go, you know, what was it that made me want to teach in the first place? Oh, now I remember that. And they can reignite the spark, I suppose. Bit of a cheesy cliche, that, isn't it?
I think you're absolutely right. And I think coaching can give you that clarity over what's the real issue here. And again, you know, I'm actually doing coaching for my dissertation, using coaching to support staff through a period of anxiety and change. And I'm looking at the work of Michael Bungay Stanier and that question of what's really on your mind. So the first question, what's on your mind? Well, you know, Teams is killing me and, you know, I've got all these parents watching my lessons. Blah, blah, blah. But what's really in your mind? Well, I'm worried they think I'm not good enough. Right. Why would they think that? And straight away, you can really get to the nub of it and help frame some of these conversations. Where do you want to be in a year's time? You know, if you look at you know, the end of the term and you feel really fulfilled, like you've smashed it, what did you do that made you feel that way? And scaffolding those opportunities for people. And in fact, we do the same through our appraisal system. So I've got an amazing deputy head, Alistair, who's completely changed how we do appraisal. And often his, you know, the big question that we unpick through appraisal is, where do you want to be in 2 years' time? And often you'll get some of these more experienced staff going, well, hopefully I'll be, you know, retired. Okay, so what's your legacy going to be? And that just shapes everything for the next 2 years. Okay, so you're not going to be here, understand that, but you've been here 10 years. So what's your legacy? What are you going to leave behind? What will you have done better than when you first came? And that again is just such a rejuvenating question.
What a great question.
Yeah, he's really,
really big. People think about it. Yeah. And I also think that CPD is so important here as well, and that it's a really essential part of well-being, because a lot of teachers who've got to that point where they've become fed up of it, have become, like you're saying, they're worried that they're not as good as the younger teachers who are coming through, aren't they? That's what underlying a lot of it. And unless you provide CPD that suits their needs, yeah, that will happen, won't it? It's a bit of a self-fulfilling prophecy.
Completely. We offer a really tailored CPD program at our school where people can opt in and out of different opportunities. We're also linked to a senior school. So we've got a staff of 400 nearly across our three schools and different. So I will lead. So I lead safeguarding level two, for instance, for staff across all three schools. And you can come if you want. You don't have to come as long as you got your level one. That's fine. But more and more staff are opting to do some of those opportunities. And somebody else might lead a session on coaching, and somebody else might lead a whole month's worth of sessions on cognitive load, you know, whatever it might be. And people pick and choose what interests them on top of your normal Wednesday CPD meetings that everyone comes to. And they all tie back to our whole school strategy as well. So you feel that sense of momentum that we're all going in the same direction, focusing on the same things, which again, go back to the children. What do our children need from us right now? They need us to be really proficient on Teams. So we've just done 4 weeks of a stranded approach to Teams. You know, if you're one that's flying with it, amazing, you're going to go to this session. And in fact, you might be leading some of it. But if you're more of a crawler like I am, I will go to a session led by somebody else that's really slow and really clear, and you're picking where you are most comfortable. And it's been completely revolutionary. It really has,
because we differentiate for the children, don't we? So and for years we've just given everybody in a school the same CPD diet that for some. I remember a head of English saying to me, what is the point in me going to that session? Because I will just be sitting there while they're telling everybody else, and I already know it's just a waste of my time. And for a lot of teachers for a number of years, CPD has just been a waste of time because it's not relevant to them. It's stuff they can already do. They're not interested in it. And it's really important that you get that right, isn't it?
It's so important. And to make sure it's a different voice each week, like I'm always saying to my SLC, I'm like, they don't want to hear from me. They really don't want to hear from me this week. Why don't we ask Kate to present on this? Or why don't we do a book look, but everyone's going to bring their books and they're all going to jump into little rooms and they're going to look at each other's things and pinch with pride and celebrate how amazing the progress of those books are. And it's led by teams, with teams. It's not led by me. And it's just making sure that you want to leave that meeting thinking, well, that's useful. I've got something from that. Rather than, oh, there goes another Wednesday afternoon. It's got to be useful.
And it helps you to create that buy-in, doesn't it? And I think in terms of well-being, feeling a sense of belonging to something, to a community, and feeling like as well like you're valued in that community is so important.
Definitely. And God, I've missed that so much. I mean, you just said the word belonging, I felt my heart just go, oh, not long, because just the thought of getting all my chicks back under one roof and then all of the staff back together and just those conversations in the staff room and popping in. We had a planning meeting at lunchtime and it was on Teams, and one of us had a bad Wi-Fi connection, so he kept trying to say something, by which point everyone had already started talking again. And I said, you know what, in 2 weeks' time we can sit in a classroom with a sandwich and do this properly.
And it's so nice, wasn't it?
Wait. And I think, you know, schools are such special places that literally they radiate love and positivity and togetherness. And we've not had that properly for so long. And we've had little tastes of it, like we did last term or in the summer when some of the kids came back. And I know they've been open the whole time. I do know that, but they're not the same. And the thought of the 8th of March, you know, I get everyone's fear and I get everyone's anxiety. Of course I do. But the thought of all of them in that place again together. Oh, can't wait.
And I just can't wait to get my son back to school, if I'm being perfectly honest. It's for purely selfish reasons.
Well, do you know what? Massive shout out to parents. Honestly, they have absolutely smashed this year and they deserve as much respect as the teachers and the children too. And I think parents are sometimes the forgotten partner in education. And actually they do a phenomenal job. And we literally turned around to ours and went, these are the Teams logins. If you could just help them, that would be great. And, you know, our kids have been amazing. We had 100% live online and the kids have been amazing with it. But reception in year one, they did it. But my God, I know their parents will have had to have done a lot of that. And every now and then, one of my colleagues is actually a parent in reception. And I just got a text from her one day just saying, meteor cakes, ? Really? I was like, oh God. Seemed like a nice idea. But our parents have just been incredible. And I think equally they've seen what the teachers are really doing now as well. And the mutual respect that Will have built between home and school is just fantastic. And I think a real positive to come from this year.
In terms of well-being when staff return to schools, there's probably going to be some anxiety, isn't there? Like a level of anxiety amongst some members of staff about everybody coming back at the same time. Some members of staff are going to be absolutely exhausted because they've been trying to work and educate their children at home. So there'll be potentially, you know, a number of challenges that will be being faced when you go back to school. So what's the plan in that aspect for you?
So I think the first plan is to find out what those anxieties are before they come back. I think that's really important. Again, those coaching conversations will be integral to that, and just really getting a sense of what's worrying you. I think when we did that last time, when we were getting ready for September, they fell into two very clear camps. Those that were quick fixes that we could go, oh, no problem, have a visor, or no problem, open your window. And then those where you go, that's going to take a bit more work and a bit more discussion. I think it's going to be going into every conversation with a very open mind, because I think we feel as leaders, we know our staff so well. We'll go, well, she'll be fine and he'll be fine, but she'll be really worried or he'll be really wobbly. And I think you've got to get rid of all of those preconceptions, because you've never known your staff through a pandemic. So why do you think you would know how they're going to feel?
Yeah.
You've got to get rid of all of those preconceptions and assume nothing and ask until you know everything. And then try and be as flexible as you can to meet the needs of staff, but not at the cost of the children. And I think it's going to be a very careful balancing act, because the children need the right people in front of them who are in the right frame of mind. And therefore, you are going to have to scaffold that for those staff until they feel confident. And then it's just about that constant checking in and reassurance. You know, if we do any learning walks in the first few weeks back, there'll be learning walks to see how the staff are feeling, how the children are managing those behaviours and that social distancing, and what can we be putting in place to make it feel and look a bit safer if it needs to, rather than going, right, where's the progress? Where's the evidence? You know, there's a time and a place for that. But the first few weeks will just be getting people feeling confident again. I mean, what we noticed certainly in September was within a few weeks they did, even the ones that had said they were really worried, once they got back in, they were far less worried.
There is a sense, isn't there, beforehand of often a sense of dread or a sense of like doom about going back, but actually doing it is often different from what
really
people
is.
Are expecting.
It really is. And that's where, I mean, gosh, if you do follow me on Twitter, you'll see I'm 98% the most positive person in the world. The 2% will come out in defense of teachers every time. And I do think the media at times has been amazing over the last year, but at other times has been deeply, deeply divisive and unhelpful. And I think, you know, we need to help ourselves by just switching that off and just thinking, you know, I can't control that. I'm just not going to listen to it, and hope that lots of other people do that too. You know, I can't tell you how many times the unions have spoken on behalf of me, despite the fact that I have never once been asked for my opinion by a union. I don't even remember which union I'm a part of, which is dreadful, really. But, you know, no one at any point has canvassed my opinion. And yet I've read enough headlines about how many head teachers, you know, feel X, Y, or Z. And you think, you're not speaking for me. And I think sometimes one of the best things you can do for your well-being is think, you know, I can control how I manage this situation, and 3 hours of trawling on mainstream media is not going to help my well-being. I'm going to switch that off. And I think that's really important.
Switch off the news.
Yes.
Yeah. At the start of the pandemic, I could not get enough news. It was just like news, news, news. And then I realized I had to switch it off, and I barely watch the news now. I watched yesterday when Boris Johnson was doing his announcement, just because I was so eager to find out when I'd be able to go and stay in my caravan. Yeah. So 12th of April, I'm keeping my fingers crossed. So yeah, there are things. It's about controlling the controllables, isn't it?
It exactly is that. And you know, we've talked about that as a narrative in our school for the last year. We've said that to our parents on many a time. You know, there's that brilliant Venn diagram, isn't there, of what you can control and what you can do this, and then how you feel about it. It's that bit in the middle, and that's what you focus your energies on. And we've said that all the way through. I mean, God, I'm the daughter of a journalist who worked in news for 40 years, so I grew up on a diet of news and politics and reading the papers. And even me in the last few months, I've just thought, I'm just not going to listen. I'm not going to read it. Because actually, you know, the speculation, I think, was probably one of the most challenging things over the last year. It was constant speculation. And I think when they said, you know, we're not going to tell you till the 22nd of February, I then went, okay. And suddenly I felt 100 times better. And when I was reading all of these experts on Twitter going, oh, I know that we're going to be doing this. No, you don't. You don't know that at all. Just shush your noise and we'll see what happens on the 22nd. And that brought me a great deal of peace and reassurance, actually. And I kept saying to people that were worrying, we've done a full reopening, we've done a partial reopening, we've done a closed but only open for key worker kids. It's going to be one of those three. So yeah. What are you worried about? We've done it all.
And do what matters to you in your context, to your children and your parents. And if you need to ask for advice and look for support, look for it. But you don't have to compare yourself with other schools and other leaders and everything else that's going on around you.
Couldn't agree more. Comparison is so unhelpful. There's that brilliant cartoon, isn't there, about assessment, and you know, everyone will feel a failure if it's about climbing a tree and you're a fish, you know, and all that kind of stuff. Same with school leadership or being a teacher. You know, don't bother walking around looking at everybody else thinking, oh god, they're doing far more than us. Do what's right for your kids. You'll know when you see the children if you're getting it right or not, and if the children look worried and stressed and they're not there and your attendance is low, maybe you aren't getting it right. But actually, if they're rocking up, they're doing their best, you're doing something right, and just keep doing it, because you know your school, you know your context, you know your parents.
And that's what most children and teachers will do, won't they? The vast majority will come back and will cope with it and deal with it. You've shared some brilliant advice with us today. And I did want to ask you, as a female head, what would you say to other female leaders about what it's like to become a head? What tips or advice would you give to them?
So my first tip would be something that was given to me by somebody else. When I first said I was applying for the headship, she said to me, what's worrying you? And I said, everyone else will think I'm too young. And she said, what other people think of you is absolutely none of your business. And I thought that was just the best advice. Actually, it's none of my business. I can't control it. So whatever, you know, you think what you want and I'll do what I know is right for me. So one is stop worrying about other people, for sure. Two is have a really honest appraisal of yourself. And by that, I don't mean overly negative at all or overly positive, but an honest appraisal of yourself. What am I good at? What am I not good at? So I did that quite early on. I thought, okay, I'm a good teacher. I understand teaching and learning. I'm good at building relationships. The operational and business side of running a school, I'm useless at. So I then built in literally lessons with key people that could help me to get up to speed on managing a budget, writing a risk assessment, whatever it might have been. So that when I did hit the ground running, I knew that where I did have weaknesses, I'd already put work in place to get better at those areas. And then it's a case, I think, once you've got that headship, of having an SLT around you that you work brilliantly with. And you do that by building those relationships and setting out really clearly what you expect from your SLT and what they can expect from you. And I remember saying to mine straight away, I need you to challenge me. If you think I'm running headlong with a great deal of enthusiasm and passion into a really bad idea, which would not be the first time, tell me. Please don't sit there and nod and go, oh yeah, great idea, and then let me walk out and think, what is she doing? Just say it. You're not going to hurt my feelings. You're not going to upset me. We're not going to fall out. I'm not going to pull rank. I will just go, oh, okay, why? And I think that's so important. But equally as an SLT, once you've collectively made that decision, then you walk out that door in complete unison, whether you agree or not. Once you've hashed it out, you need to make sure that you're in unity. And also surround yourself with people that make you feel good and happy. You know, the ones you can shut the door and go, you will never guess what I just did. Because you need that. People often say headship's a lonely place. And in fact, I've never found that. And that's very, very lucky for me, I know. But actually, I've got a team around me who I trust implicitly that I can tell anything to. And therefore, I've never, ever felt lonely in headship. And I think it's really important that you build up a team around you that you can be like that with.
So you'd recommend it then?
Oh, my God. Every day. It is the best job in the world. I can't tell you. I know it has its challenges. Of course, it does, particularly in the last year. But it is the best job in the world to know that you are part of that community, that you are shaping those opportunities, those experiences. I'm getting goosebumps saying it. It's the best job in the world. Best job in the world.
Brilliant. You're making me feel a bit like maybe I missed out.
Do it.
I'm loving what I do for now. And I've said to my partner, never say never. So you never know. Maybe you've planted a little seed in there that maybe one day I'll go back. Yeah, it's been absolutely brilliant to talk to you, Clemmy. Thanks so much for your time. There are loads of, I hate this phrase, golden nuggets, but there are lots of, you know, some really good succinct advice that you've given there. And I'm sure people will be I don't think you rewind anymore, do you? That shows my age.
It's not like listening
to tape. Yes, they'll be playing it back. They'll be going back and replaying different bits because there's some really sage advice that you gave us. If people want to follow you on Twitter or they want to find out more about you, how can they go about that?
So on my Twitter handle is at cstewartshs, so Stuart, S-T-E-W-A-R-T. And if anyone's got any specific questions about the coaching program or anything at all about what I've said, I'd be very happy to have a conversation with someone on Teams or Zoom or, God forbid, over a coffee if you're ever near London and we're all allowed to be together again. I'd be very, very happy to help anybody else. Or equally, if there's any woman or man out there who thinks they might be interested in just dipping their toe into headship or having a conversation, or wanting someone to help them out, just give me a shout. I'm always happy to help and support other people.
Brilliant. Yes, it's not solely women. I don't want to alienate any of our male listeners, but I'm sure they understand that it's really important that we promote women in education, and that I would think that our male listeners would be very much in support of us and our drive to get women to be a bit braver.
Yeah, and there are some amazing men out there who do that. Yeah. You know, people like Patrick, Otley O'Connor, Nick Hurd, who's actually I work with on my masters, you know, men that really do actively lift up women. And equally, you know, we've got some men out there who would be absolutely petrified of becoming a head and yet would have so much to bring to the table. So anyone who's nervous, get in touch and I will happily help you out.
Just to, you know, give yourself something to do because you're not busy enough already.
Yeah. My husband is like, why did you say that? But yeah, no, we're all here to help each other, aren't we?
We are. Thank you so much for joining us. I hope you'll be able to join us at some point in the future as well. It'd be great.
Love
if you could.
Love to.
Brilliant.
Thank you.
Thanks, Clemmie. Take care. Wow, I absolutely loved that interview with Clemmie Stewart. She was such great fun. And she says so much that makes sense. She's really positive and she is absolutely amazing. The things that that woman has done and does just astounds me. I don't know where she gets the energy and the time to do it all, but I have to say I admire her so much for that. What she's doing is just brilliant. And find her on Twitter and have a look at her tweets, because they, like I was saying at the start of the interview, I find them so uplifting. She's got such a positive outlook and she says really useful, really insightful things. So go and find her and have a look at her. And like I was saying, go back over the interview and listen to some of the advice that she gives, because it's particularly useful. And especially what she says about how we need to look after our staff now that we're back in school and now that we're trying to get things back to normal. What she says is really useful and really, really good way of looking after your staff. So I really hoped you enjoyed that interview as much as I did. I had so much fun recording that with Clemmie, and I really do hope that she will come back and join us on the show at some point in future. And I also had a listen to her Clemmie and M podcast, which I would also recommend. That is really great fun. Just having a listen to two people, having a chat, an interesting chat about all sorts of things, and then some really great interviews on there. So I would highly recommend that as well. I am really pleased to tell you that my group coaching program starts next week for women leaders, and we are all really excited about that. If you would like to join me on a future group coaching program, because this one is now full up, you can get in touch with me via my website at www.transformeducationcoach.com. You can find me on Twitter, just searching the We Lead Well podcast. Or it would be really great if you could join our Facebook group, the We Lead Well Facebook group. Just find us on Facebook and request to join, and I will let you in with pleasure. Well, that's all we've got time for this episode. It's been really great to chat to you. I'm looking forward to seeing you next time. Take care of yourself, take care of your staff, and lead well. This episode of the We Lead Well podcast was brought to you in partnership with Transform Education Coaching, headteacherchat.com, and the Teach Well Alliance.